Now, technically, of course, the Nexians could not secede from the League because of the oath of eternal allegiance. This was the oath, remember, that every ally swore to Athens, followed by sinking lumps of iron into the sea. On the other hand, autonomy was an inherent feature of the polis system, so at least the Nexians' concerns should have been heard. So Thucydides' comment, that is, this is the first time the constitution of an allied city had been disregarded, that comment speaks volumes. If we move ahead 5 years now to the year 465 and to the island of Thasos in the North Aegean, this is off the coastline of Thrace. Thasos decided to revolt from the League. Once again, the Athenians ignored the factors that caused the revolt and they concentrated on getting the island back. It took them a long time. It was a siege of 2 years led by Cimon before finally the Thasians fell. They gave in and the island was forced back into the Delian League. Note once again the use of force. The reason the Athenians gave for their must have this place back or else attitude was that Thasos was vital to Athenian security in the North Aegean. It was also close to rich timber areas, and on the face of it, these reasons made sense. But the hidden agenda on the part of the Athenians, and here we're really thinking of Pericles, who has not exactly come to the forefront in Athenian political life yet, but he's starting to be someone that we should take an interest in. The hidden agenda was the rich mines on the island. When Thasos capitulated after this 2 year siege, the Athenians took over these mines. In other words, they assumed control of them. They used the mining revenue for their own purposes, not for the League purposes. What's more, the Thasian fleet was taken off the people and absorbed into the Athenian fleet. And as with Naxos, the Athenians decided that from now on, Thasos would pay its phoros, its tribute, in money. Now, all of this is clear exploitation on the Athenians' part, and it's a blatant disregard of allied autonomy. More than this is the Athenians' trend of pinching allied ships for their own navy, of making allies that had originally paid tribute in ships now pay that tribute in money, and also holding allies true to their oath of allegiance. The Athenians were not going to let any ally off. Note also, there is absolutely no concern on the part of the Athenians for allied discontent. They don't want to know about it. They don't want to compromise. This is not the sign of a good leader. As far as the allies are concerned, there is no room for them to maneuver in the Delian League, none at all. And all of these things, what I've just been talking about, are always indications of an empire getting off the ground. But we cannot say either Naxos in 470 or Thasos in 465, or even both together, represent the point where the League has become an empire. We'll have to wait a few more years for that. On the home front in Athens, things were about to hot up. I mentioned before that that Persia played a key role in Athenian foreign policy after the Persian Wars, and so also did Sparta. Athenian relations with Sparta come to be polarized in the policies of the two principal statesmen or politicians of the time, Cimon and Themistocles. Cimon was in favor of maintaining amicable relations with Sparta and not risking antagonism. The problem was, Cimon was also an imperialist who was intent on expanding Athens' empire, and we've seen he's not afraid of taking the Persians on in battle.